Yo everyone, welcome back to brand new Tekkish. I'm Michael Behane and I'm joined with the amazing
Abatesi.
Whoop whoop. Should we get cracking with the latest stories?
Tekkish.
Your favorite podcast. Yo, this episode is sponsored by Modern Tribe. They're an amazing digital agency based out in the States. They do work with a lot of amazing Fortune 500 companies. I'm looking on their website now. eBay, MTV, Harvard Law School. That's nuts. Anyways, they're looking for a DevOps engineer and it's a part-time role and it's remote for January, 10 to 15 hours a week. So if that's something of interest, link in the show notes, pocketjobs.com. I saw an article, I can't remember where it is now, but where it was written, but essentially how a lot of people now are using Instagram as like therapy. They follow all these kind of like therapy centric accounts.
Yeah.
And like, I kind of feel like it's going to McDonald's and ordering a salad. Like, it's like, I feel like a lot of the traumas and insecurities and anxiety that we have are really exacerbated by this platform. And now we're trying to go to this platform for the cure. I don't know how you feel about that. Like, would you ever follow those pages where it's all? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like the ones which give you like advice. I feel like influencers are life coaches now as well, though.
Absolutely.
Like even just the way you now see like an essay, you know, 800 words underneath a photo. Like 8 years ago, I didn't know where I was. I didn't know who I was. I was in a toxic relationship, abusive relationship. Boom, boom, boom. Look at me now. Well, here's how I feel about it. It is weird double-sided thing that on the one hand being on social media and being on Instagram makes you insecure and like creates anxiety and stress. All the research shows that, but then at the same time we've like created these behaviors where it's very difficult for us to quit them.
Yeah,
so I feel like if someone finds solace on Instagram,
good for them.
Therapy is expensive.
It is. That's
it's
the thing,
very expensive,
because I feel like the narrative around therapy, especially within the black culture now, is becoming really like pushed and it's really positive, and I've done it before, you know what I'm saying. And it's just really expensive, though, like you said. So not everyone's going to be able to afford it. And I guess when you're on a platform every day for hours at an end, you might as well pivot it towards something positive, I guess. So I ain't mad at it.
It is kind of dark, though, because if you think about it, Facebook and Instagram sell attention.
They do.
So by finding this like alternate benefit that people can get from their product, people's attention will be exploited for probably far more like nefarious things.
But they got our attention anyway. We're there. You know what I'm saying? We're already there glued. Like I looked at my screen time feature on iOS, like, and there was like one day I was on my phone for 7 hours.
What?
I was like, bruv, I was like, how?
You were
like,
Instagramming.
I wasn't, it was, some of it was Instagram, some of it was WhatsApp, some of it was just like, you know, Spotify, just like picking up the phone 200 times in a day. I was like, yo, and now I've scaled it back to like 2-3 hours. But even that, I still got work to do.
Yeah.
And then we were sitting here wondering why we feel so frazzled and kind of anxious and what's going on and whatever.
Do you know what though? Like, I'll say one thing. Like in the last few weeks, I've gone days sometimes without checking Instagram.
You're a gangster, I rate you.
And it's just so much nicer when you do. Because the thing is, once you open it, you feel like, okay, I'm going to update my story, tell people what's going on. Or you see something and you're like, oh, I'm going to like share that.
Right.
And then before you know it, you're like, oh, what's going on in this story? Oh, what's going on in that story? Oh, what's happening in that post? What's happening in that post?
Yeah.
And it's just so bad. I mean, I turned off notifications long, long time ago. But sometimes I've opened Instagram to reply to an Instagram message I got.
Right.
And then I got so distracted by other stuff that's happening in there that I then like put my phone down because I'm like, no, go away phone, I need to do stuff. And then I'm like, oh wait, hang on, I picked you up to do something. So, you know, I just kind of feel like we need that legislation. We need it.
We need the law to help us.
No, they need to, because like I'm talking about infinite scroll. I want an option to turn off infinite scroll. I want like a finite amount of scrolling distance. Like I'm probably scrolling millions of miles a day.
Real talk.
Like you just add that up. I've scrolled to the moon and back.
Your thumb is hench now. Your thumb's got muscles.
Literally.
Like.
And I was just like, no, I want limitation on the amount I'm allowed.
They put a little thing in there saying you've now caught up, you've seen everything there is to see. And when I saw that thing happen to me, I was like, damn, I have reached the end of the road.
Yeah.
I've been scrolling for so long that even Instagram is like, yo bro, you've seen everything, relax.
Yeah.
But I was listening to a podcast and they had like one of Cardi B's friends on there, and she was saying how
Cardi C.
Trust me, I mean, they might be offended because Cardi B's a blood, so Cardi C, not Cardi C, don't be offended please. Anyways, so she was talking about how like Cardi B actually like breaks down and cries when she sees some of the comments. Essentially, she made her come up on Instagram. So when you're an influencer, like, essentially engaging with this platform and it's your lifeline and it's your lifeblood, once you get to a certain scale of fame, and obviously the comments are just going to get much more toxic and much more like just angry, just factor of life.
Like, she's now struggling to distance herself from it because her whole career and life has been based on this thing. And now she's there, like, genuinely, like, crying tears. And I'm like, whoa. Like, it's mad.
There's this weird thing with social media, though. Like, you know the way people have Finsta accounts, like, their fake Instagrams. Or, like, their private ones that they will share only with a few folks. I do feel that there's this weird falseness around Instagram in particular, where it probably really, if you add everything up, makes you feel more alone and makes you feel more lonely.
Yeah.
But only after making you feel like you are closer and connected to other people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
if you sum all, if you sum it all up, like, you know, X units to make you feel more connected to people through your posting and your sharing and whatever, plus X units of, like, jealousy, insecurity, anxiety that you feel from scrolling through everyone else's, or, like, not getting as many likes or comments or whatever that you want. When you add that all up, like, the net is almost certainly going to be a negative thing.
Of course.
But the semblance of feeling connected to other people, or, like, those little bursts of joy that come from sharing and someone likes you and someone DMs you and then you're like, oh, wow, I've really impacted someone's life, is just enough to keep you coming back.
Completely. I think someone said that social media is to, you know, friendship what porn is to sex. As in, it's like a false version of connectedness where you're like, oh, yeah, I'm connecting with my people. And I'm like, you're not really. Like, in fact, actually, probably our friendships would be better served if we came off these platforms and things like WhatsApp. Because then your friends would have to be like, let me call this person that I'm actually missing.
It's so
and
let's true. Meet
up. Because now I can just, because right now you can just touch base, lightly touch base. Hope you're doing all right. Yeah. Thumbs up, like.
Double click.
Yeah, exactly. Double or like, tap. You know, the one of the best and worst features is like you can watch someone's story and then quickly send them like a little like emoji.
Clap.
Yeah, a little clap. Like,
low touch friendship. Yeah,
bro, the most low touch friendship you can imagine. Wow. I don't even have to even write a message saying this is cool. I can just be like, clap, you know.
And you know, like, people stop asking you how something was because they see it on social media.
Yeah.
So if you go away for 2 weeks to Lisbon or whatever, I'm not going to see you. And when I see you, I'm not going to be like, oh, how was your trip? I'll be like, oh, yeah, I saw the stories. Yeah,
that's
cool,
it.
Man.
That's what I'm saying.
So you're right. It, like, humanity, we should have one day where we have a social media amnesty. No, but for real, like, you know when they're like, drop the guns in the box, drop the knives in the box.
Do it. I think we're the only ones that do it.
Drop the phones in the box. Let's connect in real life.
So the next thing I want to kind of shout out, it's kind of on the theme of Black Girl Magic. Actually, I think on Thursday it was, in the States, it was Black Women's Equal Pay Day, which is the day where, you know how Black women earn like 63 cents on a dollar to every white man, basically.
Mm.
So this is the point in the year where everything after that, they're not earning as much as straight white men, essentially.
I can go home.
Yeah, you can go home because you're basically, right? So I thought, obviously, we could talk about that. But then obviously, I wanted to talk about some positive news. So Tastemakers Africa, which is run by Sheree Robinson, who's a really awesome Black woman entrepreneur. She just raised 1.4 mil, which is amazing. Sarah Kuntz, she is the lead of Clio Capital, a VC firm. She just raised $3.5 million to give money to essentially to women scouts to invest in, you know, other women founders. So we all know the data about how Black women don't get the percentage of VC funds. But anecdotally, all of the Black women I know, like in the tech game, they're crushing it more than the dudes. Like, you know, you Afrocentrics, Cashmere, like, so many cool companies, like, it's amazing, right? Don't you think?
But maybe that's just,
it's anecdotal, completely bullshit. Yeah, because I
know
that, right?
Proportional to all the other activity that's going on.
It's tiny.
It's still not representative of, like, wider society.
Yeah.
And I personally feel like progress on the representation piece, I mean, this is incredible, like, absolutely huge, huge, huge congrats to these achievements. But as far as getting equal representation of female founders getting access to capital, Black and brown founders getting access to capital,
so far to go.
It's just moving at a glacial pace to the point where I'm like, in my lifetime, will I see representation? And sort of related to this, I'm kind of like curious to hear your view on this. I was recently asked by someone working in broadcasting, so like creating content for television and online and stuff, how soon do you think we can get to healthy representation for on-screen content?
Right.
Before I say what I said,
go on.
I want to hear what you said.
How
what
soon?
You think.
Mm. Oh, so like in terms of movies, in terms of like how soon? What, like 50-50 type thing? or just, I don't know.
So what you would consider healthy representation.
Oh, what do I consider to be healthy representation?
Yeah. So, okay. So my idea of healthy representation, let's say looking at the UK, for example, 50-50 men and women.
Yeah.
20% black and minority ethnic backgrounds, which is the acronym we use here in the UK.
Yeah.
Maybe 10% LGBTQIA plus another maybe 10, 15, even 20%. I need to check the stats. Disabled.
Right.
And ideally people with a physical disability, so we can see people with wheelchairs and see people with other disabilities on screen. And then across, you know, from non-religious, spiritual slash atheist slash whatever backgrounds, all the way up to visible religions. I'm talking Sikhs, yarmulkes, hijabs. That kind of a scene. Like, you would turn on the news and it could be someone in a wheelchair, or you could start watching a movie about the political cabinet meeting and it could be like, you know, half the table's brown.
Got you.
And
there's someone
in a hijab in there.
I think how soon will that happen? I don't think it will happen in my lifetime, especially not in media. That's what I think, honestly. That's the depressing answer.
That's what I said.
Yeah, that's the depressing answer. Especially media is really hard, because if you notice in music, the representation is a lot better. Because the barrier to entry to make a song is quite low now. You can just put, you can be Lil Nas X, do a little tune, whatever, whatever. But in media, there are so many gatekeepers.
Mm.
Like, there are so many middle class, upper middle class, you know, privately educated people who are the gatekeepers who have to decide. Like, even sometimes I'll open, this is tangent, but I'll open the Evening Standard, which is like our local London newspaper, the main London newspaper. And I'm like, this is not my London. I don't recognize these. I don't interact with these type of journalists. I don't interact with these opinion people. And they, when they do like the celebrity page, I don't reckon, like, these aren't, this isn't the London I know, which is basically majority minority, if that makes any sense. But the paper doesn't reflect that.
Mm.
And those are the type of people who are also the gatekeepers in media. That's why so many black actors, and I know a lot of Americans actually hate on it, because there's so many black British actors that have to go to Hollywood, which is even not even that much of a great, you know, like, they're not, they don't even have a great standard of representation themselves there, but it's much better than here. Do you know what I mean? So in terms of media, never. Like, I don't foresee it until, unless there's a radical change.
And isn't that concerning to you?
Of course it's concerning, but I am not one who is inherently optimistic. That's the thing. I think my predisposition is, like, I just don't unfortunately expect people in power to do the right things all the time, because I just haven't seen that in my life. Things have got better slowly, but they're hard-fought gains. So to say to me, when is it going to be great? When is it going to be thing? I can't even foresee that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm speaking to somebody who tries in tech to fight that battle.
Yes.
For my day job.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't know. Like,
and the reason why, you know, I agree with you, by the way, that I also don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, truthfully, as someone who, I mean, you've been in the game slightly longer than me, but I would say probably for the last 3 years. So Hustle Cruise existed for 3 years, which means for 3 years, I've spent the majority of my waking time putting every resource I can towards greater representation, better diversity and inclusion within tech. And I have seen so little change, like, materially. Don't get me wrong. Like, I've been connected to more people that were in the space that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
I've seen information, disseminate to wider audiences and more people and have a wider reach. But in terms of the application of that information, or seeing these people who are operating in this space, you know, move the needle, as we say, like, influence decision makers, make teams look a bit different, or make money move into pockets that otherwise won't have moved to, I haven't really seen that change in these 3 years. That's why I just kind of thought, so since the best indicator of the future is the past, that probably means that the next 3 years, unless something happens, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
So maybe things only really change in cycles of like 10, even maybe 20 years. And so how much change can you realistically achieve in a cycle of 20 years? And then we only have 5 of those cycles in a century.
Yeah.
So we've got 5 potentially impactful changes happening. And like you said, that's over a lifetime.
I think it's like asking somebody in like 1969, what progress have you seen for civil rights and what do you expect over the next 5 years?
Exactly.
And I think it's only over a 50-year, a 60-year, you know, interval where you're like, okay, there was some progress made and we still got a long way to go. But like, at this stage now in tech and media, like, I think we're in that stage in the inning. It's interesting because somebody tweeted, how many of these classic 80s movies have you seen? Yeah, and then somebody, I think he was the creator of the Oscar So White hashtag, actually. I think her name's April. I might have got that wrong. She was like, wow, it's amazing, though. Like, only three of these movies have, like, a lead actor of color, which was Eddie Murphy. So,
and it was probably, like, Trading Places.
Trading Places.
Which is, like, right. So stereotyped.
Yeah, Trading Places powerful. And, like, Beverly Hills Cop, all these classic 80s movies, right? So, in that sense, you've got to give it up to what people like Eddie did, as problematic as he is in his personal life, in how much he led the ground to even fight that battle.
And this is the thing, it evolves, right? Yeah. So the first level of representation is like, just get them on the screen, right? Because in the olden days, white people did blackface and played black people.
Yeah.
And then there was like, or you can use real black people. And it's still happening, by the way, with like all the other underrepresented groups as well. Like, you know, able-bodied people playing disabled people. What's that guy, Ben Kingsley, played friggin' Gandhi?
Apparently he's part Asian though.
Okay.
I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Let's do that 23andMe. Let's send that in.
Do the data. Let's find out.
The next stage, which is the one that we're at, which is like, well, what roles do we play? Because I don't care if there are black people on the screen if the only roles they play are gangsters.
Yeah.
Or I don't care if there are women on the screen if the only role they play is like rape victim or wife or eye candy. You know what I mean? Like, let me have a woman leader. Let me have whatever. And then we're so far. So I did a really interesting interview for Product Hunt Radio with Cortland Allen of Indie Hackers. And so many of us are out here hustling, striving, trying to do our thing. So I thought it would be quite fun for him to share advice on what not to do as a maker.
Mm.
And one of the things that I thought was really valuable, kind of wanted to like bring up, was around this idea of launching.
Yeah.
So anyone that's working on any product is always thinking about, wow, what's going to happen when I actually like stop testing this thing and share it with the public and launch it to the public. And Cortland made this really good point, which was people always start thinking about their launch too late.
Yeah.
When really you should be thinking about your launch from day one, like as you're building the product. You want to be thinking about, who is going to want this product? Who am I building it for? Mm. And basically build in the open. Like by the time you launch, you should already have a community around you.
Yeah.
Who are the people that you leaned into as you developed the product, the people that you tweeted out to when you had a new development, or the people who read the blog post where you asked a question about whether you should have feature A or feature B. And I just thought that was so true, because I know so many people that are just building in private, building in silence, and then the product's done and they're like, right, how do I find 1,000 people to download this app?
And it's like, bro,
it's not going to happen right now. And then like following on from that, he also said, the launch is not where you stop focusing on reaching an audience.
Mm.
The launch is just one iteration of things that you do to reach a new audience. You should be launching all the time.
Yeah, launch
to like launch it maybe. To the public, launch it on this platform, launch it on that platform,
yeah.
Launch it to your Instagram audience, launch it to your Twitter audience,
launching,
because ultimately it's just a way of sharing something. It's a way of like getting something out there. So I thought that was really good advice as well.
So we talked about it last week, the whole Kaepernick and Jay-Z thing. Up until about 2 weeks ago, literally every time somebody was in trouble, a black person was in trouble, everybody was like, Jay-Z, man, get your lawyers on it, because Roc Nation would always get their lawyers and help somebody. And then now, everyone's just like, Jay-Z is like the devil himself. And like, Dame Dash, one of his former business partners, comes out and says, everybody always knew that Jay-Z weren't shit. And I was like, wow, we really do throw people away real quick in this current climate. And it makes me afraid.
Cancel culture.
Yeah, cancel culture. And I wouldn't even put this down to cancel culture. This is just like, we are just so quick to switch on people.
Yeah.
And it's like, someone like you, for example, who's within your industry, in the public eye, like, does it ever worry you that one day you might make one foot wrong and all of a sudden someone's going to be like, oh, actually, you know what? Abadesi,
she's trash.
Ish. Yeah.
She's trash.
Yeah.
Oh, that's already happened. That's already...
That was me.
I have contacts at Google, so search results are very heavily controlled. I do think that all the time. Sometimes I do wonder if we're becoming more basic or more stupid as a society.
Possibly. Or do you think these platforms might accentuate our stupidity
and our lowest instincts? They certainly like incite very strong reactions in us.
Yeah.
And push us to, you know, polarizing ends.
Yeah.
I'm pro, I'm against. And I think that is like a real risk for anyone in the public eye. But then I guess that's also just like a reason to do stuff authentically to you. So I remember once watching the film High Rise.
I haven't seen it, but what's it called?
It's based on a novel by J.G. Ballard, a science fiction novel And it's all about like a high-rise building, mm-hmm. but it's like a metaphor for class.
Got you.
So like the man that's the architect that built it lives at the very, very top and it's so lovely. And then all the way at the bottom, think of a tower, like a typical council block tower, you know, multiple stories. But the director of that film, and it, I really recommend watching it, it's quite visceral, really amazing use of music and stuff like that, said, I want people to either love the film or hate the film.
Mm.
Because he felt that he had such a very clear original vision, and he's like a bit like Marmite, which is a for our American listeners a yeast spread that's like very salty. I love it.
Yeah,
and people either love it or hate it. But I just kind of think like we also just need to tolerate being disliked a bit more and being hated a bit more.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be liked by everyone. You know, like I don't want Alex Jones to like me.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, I think
I don't want Donald Trump to like me because, you know, he'll probably put his hand in my pussy the next second if he does. And he's admitted to doing it. So, you don't want everyone to like you. And isn't that okay? Do you want everyone to like you?
No, I don't want everyone to like me. I think
good,
being a people pleaser. That's the damn sure.
Nobody likes you.
Nobody likes me. I think half of... Yeah, I think being... Essentially, if you want everybody to like you, you're a people pleaser. And that's a road to nowhere because you haven't stood for anything. And if you haven't stood for anything, then...
You fall for everything.
You fall for everything. Cheesy quote time. I think there's a... Whose quote is that? Malcolm X? I don't know. Forgive me, Malcolm. Let me say it. Call your quote cheesy. Anyways. And I think Jay-Z, as a 50-year-old, and he's not really active on social media...
Jay-50?
Yeah, Jay's 50, bro. Black don't crack. You know what time it is. I don't think he cares particularly because he's not on social media. He's a grown-ass man. He knows that... He's seen the ebb and flow of public opinion shift and whatever, whatever. For the youngsters, it's difficult. Mm. For me, I think... You know, this podcast became super famous and every week somebody was like, oh, Michael, man, you're talking shit and you don't know what the hell you're talking about. I think it would get to me. I'm human. I'm not going to front and say that wouldn't get to me. And I think it would. Like, I think it's only natural. And I think you have to have a level of zenness that maybe we're not all really equipped with.
Here's an interesting exercise.
Which is what?
Think of any billionaire who has not had shit flung at them.
Yeah, but I think probably they justify it. They probably deserve it. And I don't think... You know, billionaires
Oprah?
Are...
Even Oprah had problems with her school in South Africa.
Yeah, people said, why don't you invest the money in America? Mm-hmm, you know, everyone's got something to say if you're in the public limelight. That's
particularly if you're rich.
Particularly if you're rich,
because, you know, capitalism is being exposed for its evils and oppression now.
Yeah.
Not only by lowly, uneducated plebs like in the hundreds of years ago times, but by middle class educated feeling the pinch of the penny folks who have critical analysis skills and can kind of go, this system's a bit messed up. And that means that you've got people who are in a position to see what people with far more money can do and also in a way critique it from actually quite an educated lens. Like some of the critique is valid.
Mm. It is. Yeah,
there is always a trade-off, right? Okay, I'm a billionaire. Yeah. I have, like, the combined GDP of all these tiny nations.
But do you think it's ethical? You can be an ethical billionaire? Do you think you can get to that level of wealth without having screwed somebody over or without, you know,
probably
stolen
not.
Some... Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So it is justified then. More times than not, it is.
You're gonna lose some battles to win the war.
Even me as a run-of-the-mill small business owner who runs a social enterprise, essentially... Even I'm thinking that one day me and you might be probably going to be at the end of some kind of, you know, mad flack.
Mm.
And how one deals with that, that's the question.
I think sometimes you have to put your hands up and just be like, it is what it is. But you also have to decide, like, you know, we have the power to choose to not engage with stuff.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I actively promote, especially when I'm speaking to, you know, groups of women or, you know, black and brown people in tech, anyone who's like really quite marginalized in our industry. I'm just like, people are always going to try to engage you in something that will distract you from the real work you should be doing or rob you of your valuable free time. So you also have the right to not engage with stuff, right? Like people trolling or trying to bait you into some kind of like argument, discussion, debate. You can just be like, I don't want to talk with you. I was once at a lunch with some investors and founders, and one of them started talking to me about how he wants to hire women, but ever since he's been running his startup for the last 4 years, hasn't met a single one qualified enough to join his team.
Oh, Lord.
And I was just like, anywho, what are y'all up to this weekend? Because I was like, I know what's happening here, and I'm not.
There's a quote about how racism, and I guess this could apply to sexism, it's a distraction to a certain extent.
Yes.
A lot of times, especially like racist statements. Obviously, there are racial and sexist, like,
and structural impediments,
but like a lot of statements. You could have got really riled up and been like, oh, what's up? How can you say that? Took shit, but actually, that's not what you came for. You came to get what you were trying to get.
So this is a shout out to anyone listening that's 18 to 24 years old based in London.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working with Mayor of London and A New Direction, an employability nonprofit, to put together a training program that helps you land jobs in tech startups.
Yep.
I've got people like Michael doing sessions.
I will be there.
Folks from Us2, Depop, all coming in. It's 2 weeks, 3 days a week, a few hours a day, where you get expert advice, and afterwards we coach you and connect you to employers so that you can find a job. So applications are open. If you just Google Future Startup Now, you can find out more.
Link will be in the show notes. And yeah, really, if you know somebody who's little brother, little sister, little cousin, like, recommend it to them, because I got to speak and teach in front of like the previous batch, and it's a great opportunity. Like, you get to learn from like awesome people like ABBA. Andy Iron was there last time, who's the CEO of Backstage Capital London. And yeah, it's just a great level up. So shout out to ABBA for making it happen. Whoop. And shout out to the Mayor of London for supporting it. But one other thing, actually, so the power of networking. I saw an interesting conversation on Twitter where people were like, be interesting and do interesting things first, then build your network, or the network will come as a consequence of you being, you know, having done stuff. So for example, instead of me going out there as a young person trying to network, I should really be focusing on building my, you know, valuable side project, or, you know, having an interesting career, learning valuable skills, or create something of value in general.
Yes.
And the network will come. People will want to talk to you because you've done something interesting. Versus the traditional model of, let me go out there to like business events and let me just like shake hands and hold babies and kiss babies and give them my business card or whatever. Like,
what networking events do you go to?
I don't know.
You're just kissing babies.
It's meant to be for politicians. I don't know.
Oh, anyway, right, okay, like, got it.
But like, what do you think? Do you think there's that's true?
I agree with that. Absolutely. This is the thing that the internet has changed. Everyone can have a product, even if you are the product. You know, even if the product is your LinkedIn articles about trying to break into product design.
Right.
Or your Medium posts about trying to land a customer success role. Or your Instagram page dedicated to stories about people with cats with laptops. Like,
right.
Everyone can be a creator. Everyone can be a maker. And that adds to your brand. It adds to your story. It adds to your narrative. Oh, who's Michael again? Oh, Michael, he's the guy that funds people of color in tech. Oh, who's Abadesi again? Yeah. Oh, she's the person that runs Hustle Crew. I'm not saying you need to be a founder or an entrepreneur. Like, it's got to be, have a business model and it's got to be doing stuff. But there are so many ways to showcase your interests, your passions, your aspirations, your ambitions.
Yeah.
That you may as well put effort into that because it's focused.
Right.
It's clear. It's purposeful. And then people who are interested in that can come to you rather than the scattergun approach of networking where you might go to like, okay, a black tech event. It's like, okay, so we've got in common that we're black and we're in tech.
Yeah.
But what else? Like, actually, I really want to get into blockchain and IoT, or I really want to get into whatever.
Yeah.
So I do think it makes sense. And interestingly enough, I observed something in all of the founders, but also like maybe influencers, which I use with quotation marks, but you know, people who are at the forefront of whatever industry they're in and have a very strong voice in that industry, you know, like thought leader kind of people.
Got it.
And I noticed something really interesting, and I notice it in myself as well. The first year when you first decide to go ham either on an idea, on a blog, on a project, whatever, you do what people do when they first start their career, as in you just go to every event.
Because
you're like, okay, I'm in tech now, I'm going to go to every event. Or I'm a woman in tech, I'm going to every woman in tech event. I'm going to get, you know, out there. In that first year, you're able to learn so much about what you really care about on a more detailed level and who you really chime with, that you stop going to those events because you've already met a lot of them and you realize that a lot of them maybe won't be at that event, or you just want to like create that connection on your terms. And then instead what happens is you start creating more than, so you like, first you're a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've absorbed the information, you're sifting through what's relevant, what can I use. Then you start squeezing out the sponge and you're creating stuff. And then it's kind of difficult to go back into sponge mode again unless you decide that you're wearing a different hat or you're going to enter a new space. Because then you're like, well, I kind of did all of that absorbing of everything that I need to. And now I'm in a place where I can just push stuff out and let people come into me or be more detailed in how I find stuff.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's this episode of Techish. Use the hashtag Techish and hit us up and let us know what you thought. We're always willing to engage. Lots of interesting comments last week, actually. Yeah, subscribe to our Patreon if you also want to support with your hard-earned dollars. And we'll catch you next week. Ciao.